One of the cries of men and women down through the ages is the cry for freedom. Freedom to speak, freedom to act, and freedom from want. But our human dilemma is that despite the incredible advances in science and technology, we have not been able to find a permanent solution to the subject of freedom. Yes, we cannot experience it for a few brief moments along life's way. Perhaps when we leave home, have all of our debts paid off, money in the bank, and enjoy really good health. But it's not long before we realize that true freedom, as we want it, is only temporary. It's all too fleeting. One of the dreams of the Jewish people in the first century AD was that God's Messiah would come and provide the freedom that they longed for, especially freedom from the power of Rome. Over these Sundays, we've been exploring that portrait of Jesus that Mark is painting in these first two chapters of his book. And last week, we saw that Jesus began his public life when he was in the region of Galilee, in the town of Capernaum, to be precise. And there he taught with unique authority and displayed unprecedented power over sickness and over the powers of evil. The crowds came to him in thousands. Is this the man? Is this the moment we're looking for? They would have wondered. Well, come with me to this other scene, or another scene that we find here in Mark chapter 1. It's the last section of this chapter, and verses 40 through 45. A man who is a leper came to Jesus. Now, leprosy in the ancient world was virtually incurable. But many cases that were described as leprosy were often some kinds of unpleasant skin condition, perhaps eczema or dermatitis. However, whatever the case, the sufferers of skin complaints were regarded as being unclean and therefore were forced to live outside normal society. They were the untouchables. Interestingly, the word that was used for the restoration of a leper was not the verb heal, but rather the verb cleanse. So the vital issue was not just the curing of a complaint, but the restoration of the person to society, because in fact they'd been cleansed of their sickness. And as we're reading in this second reading this morning, this restoration could only occur once they'd been examined and declared clean by the priest. And in fact, that's why we not only had the second reading this morning, but also the first, so that you could see the connection between the two. So the man that Mark is telling us about in this passage was an untouchable. And yet look what else Mark is telling us. The man came to Jesus begging and kneeling. To do that, he would have had to have come close to Jesus. And notice, Jesus didn't back away. And I'm sure you've noticed something else. He didn't ask Jesus so much to heal him or even cleanse him. But his focus was on, if you are willing, you can do this, Jesus. Now, I've sometimes wondered why Mark included this little scene. After all, he's told us that everywhere that Jesus went, he healed and restored people. We've already got that message. Well, I'm sure that Mark included this particular snapshot because there are lessons that we can learn about the man and about Jesus, but also about ourselves. So let me focus upon three points. Why the question? What happened? What does it all mean? So why the question? Think about it. The man has obviously heard about Jesus' extraordinary powers, and he trusted him. But there's something else we should note here. He was humble. His question is not whether Jesus has the power to help him, but whether Jesus is willing to help him. Humility. How often do we think about this in our relationship with God? What did Jesus say about his own relationship with God? In the letter to the Hebrews says that Jesus had this attitude, "I've come to do your will, O God." And what did Jesus teach us to pray in the prayer that we've just prayed? "Father, let your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." And that's what happened that day. The man came to Jesus and said, "If you choose, if it's your will, you can make me clean." And yet, as we reflect on this, let me ask, how often are our prayers more about telling God what we want and what we want him to be doing? "God, give me a marriage partner. God, give me the apartment I want. God, give me a well-paying job." Yes, we should be praying about these things, and God does care about these matters, but all too often we come to God only with our agenda, and we expect him to shape up in fairly short order. We ignore the fact that he has a plan and a time to give us all the good things that we need. And so we forget to say, "Lord, if you choose, if you are willing, you can do it." So what happened that day? Look at verse 41. "Moved with pity, Jesus responded, 'I do choose, be made clean.'" And Mark tells us, immediately the leprosy left the man and he was made clean. Now we read this as a distance of 2,000 years or so. This is really quite extraordinary. At a word, in a moment of time, the man was restored to full health. It raises the whole question about miracles. Now, one or two of you have already heard me make some observations about this, but I'll ask you to bear with me. Because the subject of miracles are hugely important in the gospel records. They're integral to the gospel accounts of this man Jesus. As I've already said, over the last couple of weeks, we've been seeing how Jesus cast out demons and healed the sick, all the sick who were brought to him. And Mark gives us a picture of someone with amazing power. Historically speaking, there's little doubt that Jesus was famous as a miracle worker. We read many stories of his miracles in all the four Gospels. Josephus, the Jewish historian, also records that Jesus was known for his surprising feats. And so we need to ask, can we, living in the 21st century, believe that the miracles really did happen, the way they're described? Well, as someone's pointed out, the first step towards understanding the miracles of Jesus is to understand what the other Bible writers thought, or what the Bible writers as a whole thought a miracle was. And this is because they thought about the whole subject very differently from most of us. For most people today, a miracle is where the normal laws of nature are supposedly suspended or broken, indicating that some supernatural force has been active. And so we may know of someone who has been miraculously healed of cancer. And because no other explanation is available, we say, well, maybe there is a God after all. Well, this way of viewing miracles stems from how the 21st century Western world thinks about the world in general. Most of us assume that the world is like a giant complex machine or organism with millions of interlocking parts. Science, we say, has discovered how these many parts work together and operate together, and science has formulated laws and principles by which we can predict how the machine will operate. And following this line of thinking, we understand that the world runs under its own steam. Assuming there is a God, then he might have been responsible for designing the world, even starting it through a process that we might describe as the Big Bang. But that's all he's done. He isn't involved in the day-to-day operation. That's how most people in the Western world think about the world, the universe in which they find themselves. And so they'll say, the only way we know that God exists is when he puts his fingers into the machine and dabbles with it, producing what we might call a miracle. But let me say, this is not how the writers of the Bible understood miracles. Like us, the people of the Bible times observed certain orderly patterns in the world, day and night, the four seasons, sun and rain, cold and heat. They knew if you planted seed in the ground at the right time of the year, in the right soil and under the right weather conditions, you'd be fairly certain of getting a good crop. However, unlike us, they regarded all of this as being the work of God's overruling. They saw the world not as an independently operating machine, but as something that God had made and continues to sustain and uphold. God is not only the creator, but he's also the sustainer of his universe. It was God who caused the sun to rise, the rain to fall, the seasons to come and go. They understood that God was sovereign over all aspects of his creation and that he kept everything going in his great power and wisdom. And because he's in charge of everything, God could change his normal way of doing things and act in an amazing or unusual way if he chose. Well, follow this understanding of God. We see that a miracle is not God poking his finger into the works of the machine to prove that he exists, but rather what we call a miracle is God working outside of his normal way of doing things. So what we're reading by way of miracle in this opening chapter of Mark's Gospel, Mark, together with the other writers of the Bible, is understanding that a miracle was God's work that was, yes, surprising or unusual, and which therefore took place for some important reason. The miracles that Mark records here in chapter 1 were signs that pointed to Jesus being God's Messiah or long-promised King. They're powerful indicators that God was fulfilling his ancient promises, that the one that the Jewish people had been waiting for was now with them in person. Cleansing of the leper that day was just one more pointer to Jesus' uniqueness. But there was something else happening that day. Look again at verse 41. Moved with pity, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him. You don't touch lepers. You might contract the leprosy yourself. And yet Jesus did touch this man that day. Now the attitude of Jewish people in Jesus' day towards lepers was not unlike the attitude of the 1980s to people who had contracted HIV/AIDS. They are unclean, spiritually as well as physically, to be condemned as well as avoided. It was extraordinary that Jesus would literally reach out to a man with leprosy. In doing so, he would potentially make himself unclean. So Jesus' cleansing of the man that day also serves as a parable for you and me today. For the parable is a picture of Jesus Christ in his compassion for us in our broken, unclean relationship with God, reaching out to us, touching us, and cleansing us. Dr. Alan Cole, in his commentary on Mark, says, "In the antiseptic cleanliness of modern hospitals, we lose sight of the wonder of the parable of Jesus in all his purity, stooping to touch the ugliness and stench of our sin to bring healing and forgiveness." You see, Jesus was willing to become unclean so that the leper that day might become clean. So here's a graphic picture of the good news that Jesus came to proclaim. As Paul the Apostle later put it in his letter to the Galatians, Christ redeemed us from the curse by coming under the curse for our sake. But there's a conundrum in verse 43. After sternly warning him, he sent him away at once, saying to him, See that you say nothing to anyone, but go, show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing what Moses commanded as a testimony to them. This is the second time that Jesus has asked for silence about something that he's done. Why? Why doesn't Jesus want other people to know what's happened? Why was this miracle to remain secret? The most natural thing in the world would have been for this guy to have gone and told everyone what had just occurred to him. Well, the answer lies in what we've already seen was Jesus' central mission. It was to announce the news that God's anointed ruler was now here in person. Men and women needed to face this reality. They needed to engage with this man, Jesus Christ. In every generation, men and women again have the opportunity of being able to know about him because there have been records written about him. So every generation has got the responsibility of facing up to the question, who is this man? And Jesus never wants anyone, as they start to think about him, to consider him simply as a super doctor or a glorified Santa Claus, curing people's ills and providing material benefits. Yes, Jesus did see the hungry crowds and have pity on them and feed them, but he rebuked anyone who simply came to him for the food. Yes, Jesus did see the sick and the demon-possessed and have compassion and heal them, but he never went out of his way to find the sick, to heal them. There's not one reference to anything like that occurring in any of the gospel records. Jesus saw the real human tragedy and need for what it is, spiritually broken lives. To say there are problems in the world and in our personal lives is nothing new. For centuries, philosophers, religious leaders, and politicians have made it their business to understand and solve life's dilemmas. But the Bible is insistent that our central problem is not a job for philosophers, religious leaders, or politicians, but for God himself. It required God's intervention in person. And that's what we see happening in the life of Jesus Christ. He was a man of extraordinary power and authority, and yet he didn't trumpet his work with great fanfare or targeted publicity. Nor did he surround himself with glamorous women and have them and himself protected by armed security guards. So that day, he warned the man to be quiet about the unexpected miracle in his life. But it was fitting, as the law of Moses required, that he show himself to a priest and make the appropriate sacrificial offering. That would mean that the man would receive the necessary medical certificate, formally having the cleansing acknowledged, and then enable him to re-enter normal life of society. He could go and get a job, own a house, have a family. And verse 49 tells us another reason why Jesus warned the man to be silent. Jesus, notice, could no longer go into a town openly. Such was his great reputation. He had to stay out in the country. Maybe because of this kind of public response to his extraordinary healing power, that he decided not to go back into even the city of Capernaum. But nevertheless, people kept on wanting to see him. They came to him from every quarter. We read at the end of verse 40. So in this first chapter of his gospel account, Mark has introduced us to this remarkable man. He wielded the kind of powers that only we can realize through the dreams and movies of Hollywood. He spoke with the authority of politicians would give their right arms for. And yet again and again, Jesus showed no interest in exploiting those extraordinary powers for himself. The Queen of Great Britain and the Commonwealth of Nations celebrates her 60th anniversary tomorrow. 60th anniversary on the throne, February 13. And one commentator has made this observation about her. He pointed out that over the decades she has come amongst the people, spoken with them, and related to them. In a far greater way, the Lord of the universe has come amongst us and spoken to us. His miracles have given us evidence pointing to his unique person, but they also point to his compassion. And furthermore, they give us a glimpse of the final and perfect restoration of creation. We begin to see what the new heaven and the new earth will look like and where true freedom will be found forever. But in the meantime, there is this huge discontinuity to be addressed. The discontinuity that Jesus has come to wake in us, the discontinuity caused when we chose to divorce God from our lives. Jesus came to awaken us to our need, and in turn to mediate a perfect solution. Our problem has been so great, the solution has involved his own suffering and a cross. But the great news is, he's done it. Despite the ambiguity of life's fortunes and misfortunes, we can know for sure that God is not against us, but is for us.